Hello, everyone. We're live from the podcast studios of Northern Kentucky University. My name is Ben Ryan, and I'm joined today by
Wyatt Williamson
and Samantha Studer. Today, we're going to be talking about cargo cults. A broad definition. I can't mess up my first sentence. All right. And 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello, everyone. We're live from the podcast studios of Northern Kentucky University. My name is Ben Ryan, and I am joined today by
Wyatt Williamson
and Sam Studer. We're going to be going over cargo cults today as a whole, but specifically also the John Frahn movement. A basic definition of cargo cults from an anthropologist named Kirk Hoffman, who spent time in the Pacific Islands with these said cults, states, "You get a cargo cult when the outside world, with all its material wealth, suddenly descends on remote indigenous tribes." There are many cargo cults, but like I said, we're going to be going over a few of them. Ben's going to be helping us out with that, but towards the end, we're going to be focusing mainly on the John Frahn movement. Wyatt's going to be explaining where they are at, and take it away, Wyatt.
So, we can mainly find cargo cults around Melanesia, and those developed around, like, World War II, because a lot of material was moving in from the United States towards the Pacific Theater in Japan, so they're moving through those islands, and the indigenous people of those islands noticed that the material that they were bringing in was quite a bit more advanced than what they had.
Yeah.
So what they really concluded was that stuff was sort of like divine, created by like spiritual or magical beings, whatever.
Yeah, and because it was World War II, they had island hop to get all the way up through. And so I think that's how it spread all throughout Melanesia. So that's cool.
But just kind of like a basic general belief of most of the cargo cults is that the world is going to end in some sort of terrible, tragic way. But then after, God or some ancestor or some sort of local hero will come back. Will come back and save the world and inaugurate a blissful paradise on Earth. And death and old age and illness will be unknown. And the riches and technology of the white man will accrue to the Melanesians. There are three kind of main reasons why cargo cults kind of came to exist in Melanesia. And the first one was kind of the sudden societal transition. Melanesia had very simple technology when the white people from Japan and from America were moving through there. And so an article I read called it a society of the celestial axe, which I thought was kind of interesting. But basically the whole idea was the white peoples were radically different from what the Melanesians have known and experienced throughout their whole lives.
But they thought it was cool. They were like, oh, they have that stuff. I want it too.
I would think it would be cool too. But also the way the Melanesian culture was set up kind of also helped the cargo cults kind of grow and spread. There's like a great amount of diversity in the culture of Melanesia, and they're all characterized by kind of small communities, and they don't really interact with each other very well. And when they do interact, it's mostly through conflict. And a lot of the societal rank of people are determined by the material wealth and resources they have. And so it's no wonder that they valued the cargo that the foreigners were bringing in.
Do you know, do they even have a currency? Do you happen to know that or not? I think for a second we learned that I know Micronesians used large stones as their currency. Stones.
I think that's rice like stones. A traditional currency. In modern times, they do have like a modern currency system.
Yeah, but the 1940s. So if anyone listening knows that, send us an email.
But basically, the amount of diversity and the the small communities that don't really interact caused a lot of different cargo cults to spring up. And these movements all happened independently in response to the same sort of stimulus. It first happened by word of mouth. The foreigners arrived on the shoreline, and news kind of spread from word of mouth into the more middle areas of Melanesia, that of the foreigners' power. They believed it to be like magic or sorcery. And so that's kind of why a cult kind of started around that sort of idea. Another reason why, like, the cargo cults value like a messiah so much is because of the Christian missionaries that came through and kind of started spreading stories of, you know, how Jesus was the messiah and he's supposed to come and save the world. They kind of had their own little their own takes on it, and so that's kind of how all these different movements also began springing up, and that's why John Frum is so important to the John Frum cargo cult. Anyways, moving on, there's the interactions between the foreigners and the Melanesians were, you know, sometimes they were okay, and sometimes they could be a bit tragic. One story that I kind of came across in my research was one where the indigenous people were actually building roads and docks and airfields in preparation for Roosevelt, who they believed to be the king of America, for him to deliver them magic ships and planes and things of that sort, which is, I thought was kind of interesting since they don't know very much about that stuff and they were preparing to acquire those things. Just found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think I saw where they actually built them out of sticks and stuff.
They do have a makeshift like plane made out of like wood that they use during a lot of their like ceremonies.
But it's interesting that they saw Roosevelt as a king because they don't know U.S. culture.
They don't really know.
We see their culture and we're like, that's crazy. And they see ours and we're like, well, that's kind of crazy. He must be a king.
Yeah. Some of the stories were not always so okay, I guess. One story that happened with the interaction with the Japanese is that a cult started to like amass a large following, and they started to even form into like towns. And as the Japanese planned to like disarm and disperse them, the indigenous people actually ended up trying to attack a Japanese naval vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And they believed they would be safe because they sprinkled themselves with holy water. And needless to say, they ended up dying in that altercation. So it's not always cargo cults aren't always a good thing.
Yeah, they're not always. We just want to be like these people. They believe that everyone that's coming was here to help when sometimes they can just take them down, unfortunately. I believe now we're going to kind of be shifting to the John Frum cargo cult, which is located on the island of Tana. So all of this started in around, so there are different sources that say different things. Some say that a spirit came in the late 1930s. Someone says it's definitely was 1940. I was there. It was 1940 when the spirit arrived. But the current chief, Isaac, who is the current chief of the John Frum movement in Tana, his grandfather was one of the first men who said he saw the spirit of John Frum. Whether it happened in the late 1930s or the late or 1940, we don't have a definite date on that. But he said that John Frum told Chief Isaac's grandfather to bring back their old customs. So when the missionaries came to the island of Tana, they took away custom from the native people. They took away their rights to be able to drink the kava root, which is kind of like a drug, but it's a big part of their custom, like their culture. They weren't allowed to have feasts or dances or do any of the things that made them who they were. If they did this, they would be arrested. Missionaries wanted all of them to follow Christianity. And so when John Frum came to Chief Isaac's grandfather and said, bring custom back, everyone was so excited because this spirit came to them and told them to do this. And if you bring custom back, the United States will be there and they will come and they will bring you wealth and happiness. Sorry, I just hit my knee on the table. They will bring you wealth and happiness. So Chief Isaac's grandfather came back and told all of his people this. He said, we got to do this. We got to bring our custom back and the U.S. will be here to help us. What's interesting about that is he ended up being arrested. For performing these custom acts, for drinking the kava root, for having feasts, the missionaries arrested him for years. So he became sort of, martyr. He was a martyr for the John Fromm movement. And so when he was arrested, everyone was like, oh my gosh, like we have to get him out. He was bringing our custom back. Now, what's interesting is 2 years later, the U.S. did come. And they brought all this cargo and this stuff they'd never seen before. And they paid them to help them build this small community, which was their naval base, one of the bases for mm-hmm. the army. And taught them all these cool things. They brought jeeps and planes and green money, which they had never seen before. And paid them and gave them even the simple thing as an ink pen. They had never seen an ink pen before. They thought that was the coolest thing. So how could these people have all of this stuff when they have nothing? Well, it must be because they march in lines. They wear the same uniforms. Mm-hmm. They do all of these things. So the spirits above give them all of this cool stuff that they then want. So the U.S. did come. There is some debate on whether they actually saw spirit of John Fromm.
Yeah, there's like two sides of it, right?
Yeah.
No one knows if John Fromm is actually real.
If he was like a real person. Yeah. Like Chief Isaac says, and his second son, so Chief Isaac and his second son say they still speak to him and that he's a spirit. They speak to him after drinking the kava root.
Yeah, I read that.
So whether it's a psychedelic hallucination, we don't know. But there's also that John Fromm was simply a U.S. scout saying, we're coming. We're not involved in this war yet, but we know eventually we might be. So we're just kind of scouting out the land. If we do come, we'll bring all of this cool stuff for you guys. So just get back to who you originally were. I kind of like the thought of the spirit.
The spirit would be cool.
That would be cool, but
the spirit would be cool.
Yeah. It's also, people say John Fromm sounds a lot like John Fromm.
That's what I was going to ask about.
Yeah.
Like, I've read that some people thought he was John Fromm. Some people thought he was John Prum. There was a bunch of different names. And like, wasn't it him just saying like, I'm John from America?
That's what they say it could be. You know, like John's
of course, the place he would be from or organization is up for debate.
Yeah. And they said that he could also speak their language. Which maybe he could speak kind of brokenly.
Maybe, yeah.
You know? But I'm not sure. They touched down in Port Villa and brought all of the stuff. Just to give you a little bit, Tana's not a very large island, but large enough that it's a little important. I have it written down. They have many difficulties now, though. So this movement, they were strong after 1942. Because the U.S. did come, and they did bring happiness and wealth to the community. However, they left and have not come back. It's been 80 years?
A long time.
Yeah, 80 years. And 60? 80? I can't math.
Somewhere in the range.
80, thank you, Wyatt. And so many followers have left throughout the years. They've gone to Christianity or many other things. Above that, a whole new cult sprung up on the island of Tana. It's led by a man that calls himself, or is called, Prophet Fred, who started this new religion or cult called Unity. And he was a part of the John Fromm movement. And then he broke away and he wove old customs with John Fromm and Christianity all into this ball of this new cult-like thing called Unity. John Fromm movement did not like this. They took a lot of their members, and because Fred was seen as a prophet, because he predicted that this flood was going to happen into the water, and mm-hmm. one of their lakes went dry. It was a whole thing. But John Fromm suffered from it. The movement suffered from it because they lost so many people. Because of this, they had this battle where it was against unity and the John Fromm movement that resulted in the death of 25 people. Now, since then, more people have been leaving to go to unity or Christianity on the island. Also, the cargo that they did have that was given to them by the U.S. is since severely outdated. It's been broken, and they're running out of it. So they're kind of, it's making people part of the John Fromm movement go away now because they're like, they're obviously not coming back. All of our stuff that we did get from them are going away. And so they're currently struggling to stay relevant at the moment, which is kind of sad, but maybe a good thing at the same time.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
All right, I think now we're going to go a little bit into the ceremonies they perform.
For the John Fromm movement, the ceremonies they perform are like the military drills of the U.S. military forces that were on the island at the time. It's like marching in lines with guns. So they'd use like wood poles to imitate the guns that they would use, the military units would use in their drills. And they'd like, people would raise the U.S. flag up.
That was every day, right?
Yeah, every day. It's in like certain designated times. I don't remember.
8 to 4? I believe one. Yeah. I mean, the every different one, I think, does it at a different time. But
yeah, I'd say so.
The one on Tana was 8 to 4, I believe.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that they march to like an airfield that they kind of have in preparation for like the cargo to come back.
Yes, didn't you mention like a wooden carved airplane?
Yeah, there's a lot of like
use in their ceremonies.
Yeah, like a mock airplane. I think there's like antennas and stuff that are meant to be, but they're all not functional. They're all kind of just
made out of
like props, kind of.
Yeah, I also every Friday night they drink the only the men though. I'm going to add that as the woman in the group. Only the men get to drink the kava root, and they have this big ceremony on Friday nights in a hut on the beach where they sing and they dance and they eat and they drink this kava root so that way John Fromm, they can feel closer to the spirit of John Fromm. The woman have to stay home.
Speak to John Fromm.
Yeah, so the chief apparently speaks to him all the time. You gotta be in the right
frame of mind to speak to John Fromm.
Yeah, I think you might have to be. And then February 15th is John Fromm Day. So all the different smaller like tribes of the John Fromm movement all meet up and celebrate to John Fromm. They're wearing old U.S. military outfits they found. Yeah. Or they go, the men go shirtless and paint USA on their chest and march with these bamboo muskets, which is kind of ironic since the U.S. Don't use muskets anymore. Mm-hmm. It's so kind of a little outdated.
Were the poles carved like into musket shapes, or were they just like poles?
They're carved into a general musket shape and painted. I believe where the barrel or end of said gun is painted red. And so it's kind of interesting. And they have all of the, I know Chief Isaac wears a full on uniform with tassels and all of that. And so on February 15th, they all meet up and do this huge celebration for John Fromm to try to make it so his cargo returns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's kind of them trying to make sense of the kind of the world they're in from the sudden change of all like the foreigners bringing in all the technology and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And also I think it's a way of them to like, since their traditional ways were kind of lost when they arrived, I feel like it's a way for them to kind of take that back, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And another thing is because they lost their custom and John Fromm said to give it back, and they want modern technology. Mm. They want their lives to be a little easier.
Right.
And so they're just hoping that if they do what the U.S. did, if they march in a line and they do all this stuff, they'll get it too.
Yeah.
You know, if they did it and they got all this cool stuff, why don't I do it and I get the cool stuff as well?
Yeah, I don't know if this comparison is the best one, but I feel like it's kind of when like children are trying to make sense of like what their parents do for routines and why they do it, and they like they try to emulate that to become successful and to be like their parents, kind of.
Yeah, they emulated what they saw right. from the U.S. government or armies. Mm-hmm. So it is like kids. I mean, they're grown adults right. and they are intelligent people, but they were, you know, if you emulate this person who has this stuff,
I just think it's like as well. natural way of like human nature and sense making of of your environment. I think about like if like aliens came down and like brought all this technology and like changed the way our society functioned, like I'm sure like
we'd want the same stuff.
You would get some people that would probably worship them.
Exactly. I think we're about to wrap this up. We have some questions for you guys to think about. Should outside countries step in and give these native people cargo? Is it our duty as developed countries to help the lesser developed countries if they want it? Now, if they are totally, don't want modern technology or any of that, of course not. But movements like the John Fromm movement, because they do want this modern technology and cargo, is it our responsibility to help them?
Yeah, of course. The movement itself developed because they wanted all that
modern exactly. technology. Yeah. So that's one of our walkaway questions for you guys to think about. And whether John Fromm was a spirit or a person. It's kind of it's a brain teaser. We'll never know.
Is he both?
Or he could be both. He could be a spirit now. We'll never know the truth with that one. And then one last quote to wrap us up is Chief Isaac said to a reporter, "You Christians have been waiting 2,000 years for Jesus to return to earth, and you still haven't given up hope." He has a point there.
He has a point. It's not as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah.
And they've been waiting a lot less long than Christians have.
Yeah. That's true. 80 years. All right. Thank you for listening. I'm Sam, and I'm out.
And I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Ben.
Have a good day.